I am not an expert. I've never published a book or taught a class, but I love quilting, and I love talking about quilting. I make a lot of mistakes, but I like to think that sometimes I learn from them and get just a little bit better. If hearing about someone else's goofs and mess-ups makes you feel better about yours, then I've done my job. Join me now as we talk about quilting for the rest of us. Hey, I'm Sandy, and I'm a quilter, and welcome to episode 102, in which we talk with AJ of The Quilting Pot. I am recording this on Sunday, September, I don't know, I think it's the 9th. We'll say that. It's the 9th. So be it. Make it so. Of 2012, and it's about right about noontime. I'm going to try to knock out this episode and get it posted so that I can get back to sewing. This is my one weekend home for kind of a very long time. So I've really been burning up the tracks on my sewing machine, so to speak, and getting a lot done, and I've really been enjoying it, and I need to get back to that work. But before I get on with this episode, I want to start by saying thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate it. As I always say, I have fun doing this, and I'm glad to know people have fun listening to it. I also want to say thank you for any iTunes reviews. I was just checking this morning. I don't have any new iTunes reviews, but I did notice that the Quilting for the Rest of Us podcast is listed under What's Hot in the visual arts category. Woohoo! You have to scroll down a bit to find it, but I will take it. That's kind of fun to see your podcast logo listed up there. And thank you. I think those are listed primarily by the number of reviews, so I really appreciate everybody who has taken the time to hop on over to iTunes and leave a review. And I will also note that all the other podcasters enjoy the same thing, so make sure you're reviewing all of us nicely, hopefully. As I started out saying, today's episode is primarily an interview, but then I will finish up with some announcements and listener comments at the end. So, I did have a finish this weekend. I posted it on my blog. It's my Stitch and Slash project, which is a class on Craftsy. I decided to celebrate that finish by inviting AJ of the Quilting Pot podcast, also known as Nitty AJ on Twitter, to have a conversation with me because we were both doing the same class at the same time. I had a lot of fun kind of watching her progress. I wasn't posting my progress so much because I was kind of wanting to do the big reveal thing, as I often tend to do, but it was fun to be kind of comparing notes as we went. So, with no further ado, here is my conversation with AJ. And just a note before you listen to the conversation. At one point in the conversation, I had kind of described the process that you take in this class, and then I later went back and edited that back out because what I don't want to have happen is that you listen to this podcast and you never go take the class because we've already told you everything that's in the in the class. I really do want to encourage, if this sounds like it's an interesting technique for you, go check it out on Craftsy and take the class because it really is a lot of fun. So with that addendum, let's get on with the conversation. All right. I am talking with AJ of the Quilting Pot. This is really fun to be able to interview another podcaster, but I'm going to keep this interview for myself and my own podcast. I'm going to be selfish that way. AJ and I were both taking the same class on Craftsy at the same time, so we thought it might be fun to talk together about the experience with the class and maybe get some other folks signed up for it, although I will note we are not being paid by Craftsy to do this. So, AJ, why don't you tell us a little bit about the class? You can give the introduction to what the class was.
What I got out of the class and about the class, it was to take several different colors and values of different fabric, and I based mine on a black background batting and then my colors, and then you were to stitch a design using your embroidery stitches or your decorative stitches, and then cut different layers to come up with different colors for your design. I tried to make mine X's and O's, and it came out pretty good. So basically you have several layers and you just slash different layers after you've stacked them.
Okay. Yeah, and the name of the class is Stitch and Slash, and the name of the teacher is Carol Ann Waugh, I believe is how you pronounce her last name, not 100% positive. And she does give you some design ideas, things you can follow if you want.
I chose to not follow her designs. I did a floral. I just cut out, kind of stitched, and I freehand drew my flowers first onto freezer paper, actually, and then attached that to the back of the fabric because I don't trust my ability to just stitch freehand. And that's, she had suggested that you just sort of, you know, you can mark, but you could also just start sewing. I don't trust myself to be able to just start sewing and know what I'm doing. Did you draw yours out first, too? How did you mark yours?
I drew it out on paper and kind of followed the design on paper. However, I just put mine together and just stitched, just referencing my design that I drew on paper. So unlike you, I just did mine freehand, just looking at what I've did on paper at first, and I utilized, instead of flowers, I did circles, rectangles, and odd shapes,
mm-hmm.
and that's how I came up with my design.
Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, this is, she's just teaching a technique, and you can really do anything you want with it from there, but what I found really attractive about it is that, well, one, there's a lot of variations. I mean, there's no end to the variations you can do on it, but it is also... It's one of these things that's pretty simple to do, but ends up coming out looking a lot more complex, I guess.
Yeah.
What attracted you to doing it? Why did you decide to do this class to start?
Well, I'm a technique person. I like the process. And having this process in front of me, it did not hold me to any particular pattern or anything of that nature. And I just thought it was freeing for me not to have to follow an exact design and see what I came up with, because the technique she gives you, even though you all may be doing it the same, all your products come out very, very different depending on how you chose to do her technique.
Mm-hmm. Now, she did say in the class outline, she had us, or she started by suggesting doing four layers, but I had asked her at one point, I'd posted a question into the Craftsy forum, does it work with, you know, additional layers of fabric or fewer layers? Fewer layers, I think just the impact wouldn't be as much, but she did say, you know, you can do as many layers as you want. You just have to make sure you always leave the right amount of space so that those lower layers will show through. I think, wasn't it something like your lines, you need to leave yourself 2 to 3 inches of space between your sewn lines, I think, if I remember.
That is true. However, I think some of mine weren't quite that way. But like I said, it was freeing for me. So I don't follow directions very well.
Well, that's part of why I decided to do mine on freezer paper the first time. Generally, when I do something the first time, I'm much more careful about it than, you know, if I ever do this again, I might be more able to do freehand. But I decided to draw mine out specifically so I could kind of measure where I was. I don't think I was 2 to 3 inches apart on all of my designs because some of my flowers kind of, you know, ran into each other, but it worked okay. I know I looked at pictures of yours, AJ, when you were finished. Did you, or have you gotten this far yet? Did you do any thread couching or anything when you were done with yours?
I did. I did a little cording on between all of my designs, and also I did some decorative stitches, as well as a couple of places I did some actual hand embroidery. But mm-hmm. I did do a little couching using a zigzag stitch.
Had you taken her stupendous stitching class before this?
I did.
Okay, I thought I remembered you saying that. So you were kind of messing around with several of her techniques all in once.
Yes, yes. So, you know, this one for me was not as great as the stupendous stitching, but I still like my product that I came out with,
mm-hmm.
and some of my layers, I didn't go down all four layers, so you may see my very last layer, and then you may see the second to the last, and of course, mine is purple and greens, and I use batiks to get to mine, but yeah, I like it. It's different. Now, would I do it again? Probably. And I would probably, unlike you, be more careful the second time because I tend to learn from things, from not necessarily my mistakes, but my little accidents.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, I certainly had some accidents on this one. And one of the beauties of this technique is it's really easy to cover those mistakes up. I did the classic, I'm seam ripping away the third layer and I ripped holes in my fourth, you know, the back layer. Mm-hmm. That happened in two or three different places. And part of that, I think, is the fabric I had as my fourth layer, I think, has a lower thread count or a slightly looser weave to it. So it was just moving around more than the layers I had on top of it, so it tended to catch under my seam ripper more easily. Batiks, I don't think, would do that. I was not using batiks on mine.
Well, what I can say about batiks, because of the thread count or thickness or whatever they use for batiks, some parts of my slashing with the seam ripper was a little more difficult than others. So if I was going with the grain, it went well. If I was going not with the grain, I had a lot more problem trying to get my seam ripper. So I had several seam rippers out at the time. I happened to be a collector of seam rippers because I could never find mine when I need it, so I have to buy a new one. So, what I would suggest if you try to do this technique is to make sure that you have a nice, brand new, sharp seam ripper.
Yeah, I found that. I had the first seam ripper I started to use. I only have three. I have one that I keep next to my sewing machine, and then one that's downstairs in my hand sewing basket, and then the one that came with my sewing machine, you know, that little dinky one. Mm-hmm. And so I had the three of them out next to me. The first one, and I don't remember which one it was, the first one I used, I could barely do anything. And I'm not using batiks, like I said. They're just, you know, straight up 100% cotton fat quarters. And the first one just was not ripping, and I decided it was dull, so I switched to another one, and the other one worked great. But I agree, you know, definitely make sure you've got a new one and maybe even have several options. If you only own one seam ripper, this is a good time to go out and buy yourself a couple others because they're cheap, you know, and expense, and she talks about this on the show, that expense doesn't really have anything to do with it.
No.
You know, so... in all of your seam ripper experiments, did the one that you found work best, was it a particular brand that you would recommend, or did you just think it was probably a new sharp one?
Actually, with my seam ripping, I find I go to my Clover one more mm-hmm. so than any others. And I don't know exactly what brand. It's a Clover, and it has a brown handle. And that one seemed to work the best, and that's my favorite seam ripper, if you can have a favorite. But... that's who I used mostly was the Clover. Now, she did say in her directions not to use a seam ripper that has the gigantic tip.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why that is. Maybe it's because of the areas you have to go through.
Yeah, it might catch. And yeah. Maybe that was my issue. Now that I think back, I was just using a Clover too, although mine's the blue-handled one. I wonder if maybe the pointy part was just a little bit too long, if I was catching, you know, when I caught the fourth one. Now, the reason I said I was able to cover it up, you then have the batting, and then, fortunately, my bottom layer is a yellow fabric, so the white batting, you know, kind of melded with it nicely, so you couldn't really see through it. And then the rips always kind of fell underneath the upper layers.
Yeah.
So once I went in and kind of quilted it out, nobody else would even know that there's rips in there. I know where to look for them, and I can find them, but you wouldn't see it just looking at it. So it was, you know, again, we all love those projects that let us cover up our mistakes easily.
Now that you mention it, I may have one in mind under one near my last layer, but like you said, you can't see.
Mm-hmm.
You can't see it at all.
Yeah. I did do, back to the couching, I did a little bit of couching on mine. I have one cording that I use to just kind of highlight the outlines of the flowers and the centers. And then I just used variegated threads for doing my actual quilting once I got into doing the quilting. I debated doing some more couching, but I've started worrying that it would start getting too busy with the fabrics that I had. But that was a lot of fun doing the couching too. I used a lot of monofilament thread on mine.
Oh, I just used a variegated thread for both the stitching and the quilting, all the same lime green variegated thread. So I don't do well with monofilament. I haven't mastered that yet, so I tend to stay away from it.
Aurifil. I've used monofilaments in the past and really struggled with them. I'm now using Aurifil, and I have not had any problems whatsoever.
Okay.
It really works beautifully. I know I'm an Aurifil girl. I'm always talking about Aurifil, but in terms of monofilament, I love Aurifil. I've not had any issues with breakage at all. So.
Now, I do use a lot of Aurifil myself, but I haven't tried their monofilament.
Well, definitely put that one on your list of, you know, to pick up next time you're at a quilt show and can get it on sale or something. Although I will say, I put it on my bobbin for, I used monofilament when I did my backing, and I'll talk about the backing in a minute. But I used it in the bobbin. You get a ton of monofilament on that bobbin. I mean, I've still got mostly a full bobbin left because it's such a thin thread. So it does last you a long time, so I think it is, you know, worth the price.
Okay.
So the backing, I did a backing on mine. You have not yet completed yours. You've got the finished top, correct?
I have the finished top, and I am deciding on what to do with my finished top.
Okay. We'll talk about that in a minute, because I want you to get suggestions from people. That could be fun. On mine, I decided to finish it as a wall hanging, and I did do the backing using a technique that Carol talks about in the Stitch and Slash class, although it's one I've seen variations on before. But you basically, by cutting away all the fabrics on the top, you end up with a boatload of scraps. And so instead of, you know, just tossing those, and they're odd shapes, and they're, some of them are quite small, so they'd be hard to just kind of throw in your scrap bin. So what she suggests is you use a fusible interfacing and you fuse those scraps down and then meander stitch over it to hold them down and then create a fabric out of that. And then she has several project ideas using that. So I did that for my backing. And it was a lot of fun because that meant I was able to then use all the scraps from the front. And in one case, in the center, I actually had almost a whole flower from what I had cut out of one of my flower things. So I put that in the center and then arranged the scraps around it. I needed to actually add more scraps from my stash because I didn't have quite enough, you know, to fill out the whole size that I needed. So that just gave me another design opportunity, and I had fun playing with this sort of mosaic effect that I then created. Because of the way I did my top in particular, I did decide to put a binding on it. She does not actually bind most of hers, she said in her class. She likes to just have the raw edge kind of hanging out there. I couldn't really do that with mine because of where I had the flowers. If I had, you know, planned ahead more or having done this once, I'd know better to leave more space on the edges. So I kind of had to bind to mine to fill it in. So talk about yours. That's how I finished mine. You're not sure yet how you want to finish yours. What are you kind of thinking through? What are your pros and cons?
For me, because, I, like you said, I haven't finished mine yet. The things that I am thinking about was pillow versus wall hanging. Pillow, because I like the envelope technique of a pillow and the fact that you can take it on and off and wash it, per se. And it matches the color of my bedroom.
Mm.
However, wall hanging, I'm not sure if my design lends to a wall hanging. I think it lends to more of a pillow. And I think the pillow would be the easiest for me. Because if I try to, you know, square it up, I'm going to cut off some of my design elements. And I don't think I want to do that, so I think a pillow would work better because instead of cutting it off, it would be part of my pillow design. So if that makes sense, I don't know if it makes sense or not, but I just think I will get another batik and make a pillow and
now,
stuff it myself.
She gives instructions for a pillow in the class if you want it. She has that pattern. Is that the one you would do is what she gives instructions for, or would you
Correct.
Do your own? Okay. Would you be able to, I was just trying to pull up pictures of yours. Like I said, I looked at them when you first posted them. I have not gone back. I should have looked this morning before we talked. But in terms of squaring it up, I understand. I mean, I had to, when I squared mine up, I had to be careful about that. But Do you think you could, if you did decide you wanted to do a wall hanging, maybe just put a narrow border to give yourself a little more room to work with in that respect?
It would have to be a very narrow border to on a couple on one side at least. So I don't know if I could do an asymmetrical border and have a very narrow border and larger borders and just kind of do a graduated border, which I had never thought about before.
That could be cool. I did just pull up the picture of yours, so I'm now looking at it. But yeah, I could see an asymmetrical border would be really cool
Yeah,
on your
so
design.
because like the one side, I don't know what you're looking at, but there is one little small circle that is like sitting right on the edge. That would have to have the very narrowest border, and then I could just do a graduated border around, and that might work as well. Hadn't thought about that until now.
That gives you another thought then. Well, what I will do is I'll make sure I link to your blog in my show notes, but a lot of my listeners follow your blog as well. So, to our listeners, go and look at the pictures of AJ's stitch and slash block and see if you've got suggestions for her. In the class, they do she uses a lot of class samples from when she's done this technique before, and people turn them into purses and tote bags and pillows and all sorts of stuff. Have you thought about what size is yours? Is it fat quarter size?
Yes, fat quarter
Roughly.
size,
Have you
roughly.
thought about maybe like a tote bag or something like that?
Hadn't thought about it. At one point, I thought about just totally slashing it and making like a little iPod, not iPod, iPad cover, because it would work. But I don't want to slash it more than that. No tote bag. I'm not a tote bag fan. Like I said, it'd probably either be a wall hanging or a pillow. That's probably where I'm going to leave it. I do, in her examples that she has in her studio, like the asymmetrical ones that she has done, and that is how she bordered it, I guess, was asymmetrically. So, I don't know. I'll take suggestions.
All right, so listeners, you can either, post your comments on the show notes of this episode and give your suggestions, and I'll pass them along to AJ, or you can certainly leave your suggestions on AJ's blog, which is I Knit in Quilt 2. iKnitnQuilt2.blogspot.com. But again, I will make sure I link that in the show notes. So you're not sure, would you do this technique again? Could you imagine a setting in which you might do this technique?
Sure will. Probably a little larger version of this. Basically for like a table runner. I think it would be a neat table runner. So, yeah, I would do it again. It's just freeing in the fact that I don't have to follow a pattern or worry about a scant quarter of an inch or a quarter of an inch makes it easy for me. Like I said at the beginning, I am a technique person. I do like the technique. I would probably choose different colors that I could get more of a contrast because my purples and greens seem to meld together. And so when I did mine, like I said, I didn't go all the way down to the fourth layer on some just to give a little bit of contrast.
You also, it looks like probably your top fabric, if I'm following the lines here correctly, is it's a wonderful brilliant orange in some places, but then it melds into like blue green in other places. And
Correct.
that's one of the things you do have to kind of watch on this technique is if you have a fabric that's different colors throughout it, you're going to get very different effects depending on how, what you've put it together with.
Right.
So there's some parts of yours that I'm looking at saying, wow, there's a lot of contrast there, but then other parts I can see what you mean by saying, yeah, okay, there's a little less contrast in that part. But I do love your colors. I'm a big fan of purple and green together myself as well. So.
Well, it's a learning process.
It is, and it's, as she says, it's a good way to use those fabrics that you're not sure you like either. My top fabric was my least favorite fat quarter in my collection. But because you cut away so much of it, you don't see a lot of it. And actually, by the end of it, when I had mine done, I decided that was the perfect fabric for that, you know, what it needed to do, because it even behaved differently than what I had imagined. So it's kind of fun. You know, it's one of these things where you sort of plan, but you really don't know what it's going to look like until you get it done, which I enjoyed.
That is true.
Yeah.
That's very true. So I do have a couple of fabrics that I'm not crazy about, and I may try that. I think my issue was that I picked all of my favorite fabrics.
Mm.
So, like, they kind of blended together.
Yeah.
So I think a ugly fabric on the top, not necessarily ugly, but a fabric that you don't care as much about on the top would be better.
I think it is. You know, this is sort of like they always say, there's no such thing as an ugly fabric when you cut it small enough.
Right.
that's kind of what the case is with this. You slash most of it away, and you're left with just this kind of one edge of that fabric throughout, and it's really pretty cool. So, I have in mind another project. In fact, part of why I took this class is I'm leading a challenge in our guild right now that ends in December. We're calling it the untouchables, the fabrics you're not quite sure what to do with, you know, that you've had on your shelf for a while. And I have this gorgeous fabric. I think it might be a McKenna Ryan, but I don't remember now for sure. And it's beautiful, like a kind of an aqua blue sort of color. And it's got sayings on it, you know, in certain ways. And, you know, I thought, well, do I fussy cut those sayings out and turn them into blocks or whatever? And just nothing was really striking me until I found this technique. And so now I'm kind of playing with the idea of making that fabric the bottom fabric and cutting out to get to those sayings and then having the other fabrics on top. I think that could end up really cool. So that might be what I work on next. Now that this one's done, I have another project I need to finish, and then I might go back to this technique again now that I know what I'm doing, you know.
Well, the next time I try this technique, I will know better what I'm doing, and it'll turn out a lot better. But like I said earlier, I like it. It's me.
Well, when you say it'll turn out a lot better and I'm looking at what you did, I'm like, well, gee, what you did was pretty darn good to start. So it's, you know, it's a fun process because it's different. It's unique. It's everybody, you know, everybody's doing the same technique, but it looks completely different. So it is a lot of fun.
Well, maybe fabric choices. Mm-hmm. Would have been a better way of describing when I do it the second time.
Yeah, to get more contrast and stuff.
To get more contrast.
Well, very cool. Is there anything else you would like to make sure our listeners know about this class or about using Craftsy in general?
I am a fan of Craftsy. I probably have about 6 classes that I have, and at any given moment I can go and take a look at it. I like the way that it never expires, and you can just take video notes while you're watching it. So if you have a question, you can come right back to that section instead of having to fast forward or go through the whole class again. And it's very, very easy to manipulate and to go through, and you get to see things that other people write and others' projects. So if you haven't tried Craftsy, go take a look. I think you'll enjoy. And if you want to give it a try with no expense, just go for the block of the month. I've said that in my podcast. I've put it on my blog. A free Craftsy class that you might want to try is the block of the month. And for all of the modern quilters out there, I think that would be a good one for you to start with. That's all I have.
It would definitely be. And I echo everything you say. I love Craftsy. I've got probably more than 6 classes that I've bought. And, yeah, you kind of do – I'll do an episode of one here and an episode of another there. And I will say not all of them are quilting classes. They're almost all quilting classes, but I'm also doing their artisan bread making class.
Ooh.
So they've got a pretty wide variety of classes on there, so it's definitely worth checking out. I think they're my favorite new find of the year, probably, is Craftsy.
It is a great platform.
Great platform. All right. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me, AJ, and hopefully we've convinced a few people to check out Craftsy. And again, we are not getting paid for this. They did not ask us to do this. Like I said, I enjoyed the fact that you and I were doing the same class at the same time. It was fun watching yours progress on your blog and kind of comparing it with what I was doing. So I just thought it would be fun to talk about. So thank you very much for taking time out of your Sunday morning to do that with me.
Oh, anytime, Sandy, anytime. And like I said, when we were emailing back and forth, you know, you're one of my celebs, so I was a little nervous, but it went well.
That just cracks me up. So, well, thank you. I so enjoyed being able to meet you in person and at the Mid-Atlantic Quilt Festival, and hopefully that will happen again soon, that we can be in the same place at the same time.
Hope so. I got a little farther to travel this time.
Yeah,
though.
You do. So, well, this year, Paducah. I'm going to put
that
bug in
your... Oh, that's right.
You've got to try to make it to Paducah. I'm going to be there. I believe Francis is going to be there, and I believe Pam is going to be there.
Oh, wonderful. So, I got to go look it up.
Go look it up and put it on your calendar.
Yes, I have to put my leave in early if I want to do that.
Yeah. All right. Well, hopefully
All
we'll
right
see you
then.
There. Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Sandy.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Once again, I really appreciate that AJ took the time to sit down and talk with me about our mutual experience doing the Stitch and Slash class. We really did have a lot of fun. Again, I will be posting links to AJ's blog where she has pictures of that, of her completed project, and I'll make sure I link to my blog with my pictures of my completed project. And I will, of course, also be linking to that Craftsy class. AJ had mentioned also taking Carol Ann Waugh's Stupendous Stitching class. That's one that I've had, you know, I purchased and I've had it sitting there. I'm waiting to get to it. I'm looking forward to doing that one too. I will also link to AJ has her finish from that class posted on her blog, and I'll make sure you have the link to that too, because that's a really neat, again, it's a technique class. There is a project you do out of the class, but it's mostly just kind of giving you ideas for things you can then do in future projects of your own. So that's one of the things I appreciate most. Project classes, you know, great. You do a class, you make a tote bag, and you're done. I really prefer technique classes that I can then take and use in a variety of other settings, and that's what those two classes are both very, very good about. Okay, I have a few announcements to share with you. First and foremost, I really want to bid a sad farewell to Seamed Up. Most of you have probably seen the notice by now that Seamed Up has decided it just can't continue. The folks that were putting it together, just, you know, they're trying to do it on top of jobs and everything, and just were not able to manage that. And so I want to say thank you so much to Bri Lynn and Allison and Quilt and Jenny, who all worked very hard on that. Bri Lynn and Allison from the very beginning, Quilt and Jenny joined them later on. And, you know, it was a huge effort. They really had a wonderful thing going, and I can completely understand where it just was something they were not able to keep up with on top of their other paying jobs. So thank you so much to all of you, Bri Lynn, Allison, and Quilt and Jenny, for all the work you put into that. And we're sorry it was not able to work out, but we completely understand. Related to that, I am, for the time being, going to be reinvesting myself in the Quilting for the Rest of Us group on Big Tent. I'm going to still be kind of testing out other options, but really, right now, Big Tent works best for me. I really like the fact that you get the email notifications out of the group conversations, so you're able to really pretty much do everything through your email. Now, I know there are some people who have difficulties working Big Tent, and so what I'm going to do, we actually use Big Tent for work. So I've put together a lot of demo videos and everything for the women at work on how to use aspects of Big Tent. What I'm going to be doing is looking at those demo videos and seeing if there's a way I can post if they're appropriate, you know, because some of them may have very specific things about our work groups. If they are things that are more general, I will post links to those demo videos. But I'm going to actually do a mini episode on using Big Tent, so that if you're unfamiliar with it or if you haven't really been able to figure out how to make it work best for you, you might pick up some tips through that. Or you can just skip that episode altogether. My feelings won't be hurt. That will be strictly about using Big Tent. So sometime in the next few days, I'm going to put that episode together and give you some hints and tips about using Big Tent. All right, listener comments. I actually have some this week. Yay! That's what happens when you don't, you know, compete with yourself with a giveaway. So let me go through. I'm pulling them up right now. First of all, I did post my Stitch and Slash project to Craftsy, to the class. When you finish a Craftsy class, when you do projects, you're able, well, actually anywhere throughout the process, you're able to post pictures to the class itself, and that way you can get feedback from the teacher or from other students in the class. And then when you're done, you can post your finished project, and it also goes into your general projects list on Craftsy. And so I did post my finish, and AJ, if you haven't done that yet, I would encourage you to do so, and got a few very nice comments, including from Caroline Waugh, the teacher. All the teachers are very good about commenting on everything that they see. They really stay on top of that, at least of all the classes I've done so far. And so I would say that the one drawback about Craftsy, and I did send this in as a feature request, you can't search for other members by name. And I really feel that's a drawback, because you can follow other crafters, as they call them. When you see somebody's project and you want to see their other ones, you can follow them. You click the little follow button and then you see all the other projects when they post them. But you can't search for somebody by name. So to me, I mean, I would love to go in and be able to post or to find other people that I know are on Craftsy. And unfortunately, you can't do that. The only way you can find them is if they happen to post on a class that you're taking, and then you can click on their name and then you can find them. So if you want to follow me or follow AJ, since we're both talking about this, just go to the Stitch and Slash class, and you'll see mine anyway. And hopefully, AJ, you will see hers if she posts it. So that's just yet another plug for Craftsy. I did post the pictures of my finish on my blog yesterday, I believe last night, and I've gotten several comments on all that already. Thank you very much to Michelle and Jane and Sandy of Quilt Cabana podcast, and Lori and Katie from Katie's Quilting podcast, and Landscape Lady and AJ Dub, or Amy, not the same AJ as Quilting Pot. I had also said that I have yet to name that quilt. Normally, as I'm working on a quilt, the name comes to me. This one just never has. Nothing has particularly struck me on it. So I put up there, you know, if anybody wants to make any suggestions about names, that would be great. I do want to say Michelle had said in her comment on my blog that she is taking currently Stupendous Stitching from Caroline Waugh, and she is a great teacher. And now that she's seen my finished class, she'll be signing up for Stitch and Slash. So there's another vote for taking any class from Caroline Waugh. Jane said she can't think of a name, but it's rather psychedelic, which it does have that kind of feel to it. Sandy Caldwell says that Caroline Waugh spoke at her guild a few months ago and she enjoyed her very much. I'd love to see her in person. I think she'd be very good. Lori suggested the name Psychedelic Pansies, and that's certainly one that's now on my list for consideration. Thank you, Lori. Katie said it reminds her of the amoebas her friend used to draw when they went pottery painting. So maybe it would have to be something about amoebas. That's an interesting concept, so thank you for that. Landscape Lady said, keeping with the 60s theme, how about I Never Promised You a Rose Garden? I do really like that one. That one's also on my list of names to consider. And AJ Dub Amy says it looks like a tile mosaic, and to that she's referring to the back. I posted a picture of the front and the back, and it is. It's a very mosaic effect. It's not squares. You could cut squares out of your scraps. I just, you know, you cut random pieces. So mine were all very, very random and very different sizes and shapes. So it's mosaic, but it's not, you know, kind of that tight square mosaic. Noni actually left three comments in a row as she was listening to episode 101 in which we make mistakes. Her first thing she says, just downloaded but have not listened yet. There are no mistakes, just design opportunities. She chimed back in, and then she'll make more comments when she listens. And I will say, usually I do agree with that. There's design opportunities. I will say that in my Stitch and Slash class, yes, ripping through a layer of fabric you did not intend to rip through is definitely, yeah, that's a mistake, but fortunately you can't see it and I just quilted over it and not a problem. Noni also said, I talked in my episode about cleaning out my daughter's room, and she said, I always put sorted stuff, girls' belongings, into bins and stack them in the room or the bed, out of sight, out of mind, but then she is not allowed to go or do anything till those issues have been dealt with on her return, otherwise everything gets donated or tossed. I'm tough that way. And then Noni did also ask it in that same episode again. I talked about wanting to have another of the circular sewing attachments for my permanent sewing machine, because otherwise I'd have to set up my other machine every time I wanted to use it. And she asked, would your older machine sew easy table fit in your underused son's bedroom? He could still use the room when he needs to, but your machine could live in there so you could use it without setting it up and taking it down repeatedly. That's an idea, but I don't think, because I really wouldn't need to use that machine really very often, only for that one attachment. And I have since bought the circular attachment for my main machine, so I do now have two. I figured since the old one I had gotten for free, because I inherited it, I really didn't mind paying for one that fit my main machine. So thank you, Noni, for all of your comments. And Tori left a comment also on episode 101 in which we make mistakes. And she says, all right, I've taken the plunge and downloaded the first Louise Penny Audible book on my iPad. Woohoo! And she goes on, while searching around, I saw that iBooks has two free books that are the start of a separate series from one of my favorite mystery authors, Dana Stabenow, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. She has written the Kate Shugak and Liam Campbell series, both set in Alaska. I like how the characters, especially Kate, evolve over the series. The books are A Cold Day for Murder and Fire and Ice, which are a good price and great free. The Sarah Donati books are also on iBooks. They're not free, but are very reasonable, especially given the length and historical detail. If you ever saw Last of the Mohicans, envision the hero of this book as the son of the two main characters, and you'll be all set. Truly, it was the only time Daniel Day-Lewis was sexy, but oh my, did he do it right in that movie. So, yes, I agree. And I will have to check out those other books that you mentioned. I'm going to be done pretty soon with the first, or with the newest Louise Penny book. And I've got several other books, actually. I've got a bunch of workbooks I need to read now, but I can't read those when I'm going to bed at night. I need recreational reading for trying to go to sleep. So I'm going to be kind of playing around with what the next of those, of the my next recreational book, what that will be. And so I'm keeping track of your recommendations. So thank you. Two other comments on... these are both... I don't always get notifications from Podbean when somebody comments. Usually you get an email that says so-and-so has left a comment on episode 101 and it's got the comment right in it. So I'm able to save them all in email. Once in a great while, it skips one and I don't quite understand. There doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason why that happens. But here are two. I got comments from both Tori and Debbie on previous episodes that I had not seen. And I apologize to both of you. Debbie had just commented that she hadn't listened to the episode yet, but she was very excited about the fact that she had won the giveaway, because I had emailed all of the winners and she was very excited. And by the way, the three winners, I did put your stuff in the mail on Friday morning. So Mandela, yours is going to take a while because it's got to go through customs since you're international. They said 6 to 10 days, so be keeping an eye out. The other two, you should have yours sometime this week, I hope. So hopefully you will enjoy your winnings. And thank you again for your patience waiting for me to be able to get to the post office to get those out. Tori had also left a comment, I believe it must have been on episode 100. She said, it was lovely to hear all the comments and good to know that I'm not the only one interested in money. I know lots of people wished for 100 more days with parents, and I thought about that a lot. My mom is 75 and a model for women of all ages. I want many more days with her, even if she doesn't quilt and I don't clean stables, our preferred hobbies. My dad died on April 15th, 2007 at age 70. He fell asleep on the couch one afternoon and did not wake up. Dad and I were comfortable with each other. There was nothing left unsaid between us. The time we had together was just right. I do believe he can see us and hear about our lives, and that he was there to welcome my father-in-law 4 months later after father-in-law's 18-month battle with Alzheimer's came to an end. I miss my dad, but I would rather have 100 days with the living. On a wildly different note, I got my iPad yesterday and I'm contemplating blog podcast. Eek. I'm not a techno-savvy person, so this should be interesting. Tori, thank you very much, first of all, for your story about your dad. That was very touching. And I would say, yeah, but I would suggest starting out with a blog. Easier way into it. Podcasts are actually a lot of work. And there's a lot more technical detail to learn. It's not unlearnable. Certainly, we've all learned it. We've all done it. Some programs make it easier for you to do than others. But there is a little bit more to it. If you've never done anything like that, I really suggest start out with a blog. You know, kind of get into the habit of that. And once you're doing that, then start your podcast and you will be fine. But yes, do definitely start one or the other, whichever one you are drawn to doing. Okay, that's it on the comments. Again, I'm going to be posting the links to all of AJ's projects from Craftsy, and I will post again the link to my finished project on the Stitch and Stash class, so you'll get both of those. And I think that's it for now. Like I said, I'm going to do another sort of a mini episode on Big Tent, probably not today because I really want to get back to sewing. I've got to finish up my candle mats for my donation project for Guild, because we have to turn them in on Tuesday. That's only 2 days away, but I should easily be able to finish these today if I can just get to it. And then I'm also hoping to get the borders done for my mom's UFO, the one that I finished while I was at my cottage. I did buy border fabric. Oh, let me just tell this little story before I finish up this episode. I bought fabric at a local quilt shop on Friday, and what happened is I brought the quilted with me and I laid it out. They let me take it into one of their classroom tables because there were no classes going on at the time. And I laid it out and it was auditioning fabric. And one of the women that worked there, she brought a couple of options over and she said, "Oh, these are great. You know, this would be perfect for your quilt." And they were nice, but they just weren't really jazzing me. And so I kept poking away at it and finding other options, and finally came upon a different two options that really did feel much more to me like they kind of fit the overall look I was going for. And I had tweeted pictures of both options. Unfortunately, one of my pictures apparently did not make it through. And fortunately, everybody did like the second option, which is what I ended up going with. And then I decided to use the option that the store person had laid out for a border. I decided to use that as backing because I did like it. It wasn't that I hated it. It just wasn't really grabbing me as what I needed to do. And I want to tell that story just in terms of saying, you know, trust your gut. I have one of the very first quilts. In fact, it might've been the first quilt that I did. No, it wasn't the first quilt I did. I'm sorry. I had done a couple others, but it was the first class I took. I had part of the class, it was meant for beginners, and so part of the class was, it was at Joann's, and the teacher would kind of walk around with you as you chose your fabrics. And I had chosen most of my fabrics, and I was sort of debating the last fabric I needed to choose. And she came over and she pulled one out and she said, "Oh, here's the one I think you really need to use." Now, again, this is a beginner class. Most of us had only made one or two things, so you were really kind of looking for that sort of input because you weren't sure about what you really should be doing. Well, I wasn't 100% behind the fabric she chose, but I thought, okay, she's been doing this a while. She must know better than me. I'm sure once I get into it, I will decide, yeah, she was right. I never, ever liked that fabric in that quilt. I don't know that I ever went back and changed it out. That was the quilt that was made for my daughter's bed, and I chose the fabrics when she was like 4, and I didn't finish it until she was like 12. And I was, or even, no, she was about 12, and I was just praying she still liked those fabrics when I did finish it, which she didn't really. It's on her bed, but only because she's away at college. She's okay with it. She liked having a quilt made for her, but it really wasn't her anymore. It was still the 4-year-old her. But in any case, I did finish it. But I, you know, like I said, I just never loved that fabric. And I've had a couple of other incidences where, you know, sometimes somebody will pull out a fabric and it's the perfect fabric. You know, they're right. It's great. But there's other times when they're convinced it's the perfect fabric and I'm just not. And I've had to learn to trust my gut and to decide I'm not going to be nice and buy something just because somebody says I should. When I finally, you know, when I brought my final choices up to the counter, and you know, she was there. She wasn't the one that checked me out. She came over and she goes, "Oh, well, what did you choose?" And I showed her and she's like, "Oh yeah, those are nice." And I could tell she's a little disappointed that I hadn't gone for her choice. But I just had to say, look, I'm the one that's going to be living with this. You know, I didn't say that to her, obviously, in person. I said, "Well, you know, yours is great as the backing. I love that. You know, I pointed out what I did like about it." But even so, even if I had never chosen to use any of hers, you just have to be confident in your own choices. And if something doesn't sit well with you, keep looking. You know, it will happen. You will find the right one. So that's just my own little story about finding the border fabrics for this quilt. So now I've just got to put together the borders. It's going to take me a little bit longer than usual because they are going to be mitered. I don't do mitered borders very often, so I always have to pull out my reference books and remind myself how to do it and then just pray that I do it right. So hopefully I'd like to get that done today too, if I can, because I would love to have that finished top to bring to my guild on Tuesday. But my primary thing is I've really got to get these other blocks done, my candle mats done. So that's my primary thing. Okay, so that's it for this episode. Thank you very much for listening. You know how you can get a hold of me. You can email me at sandyquilts@gmail.com, Sandy with a Y, Quilts with a Z. You can follow the blog. You can follow me on Twitter, Pinterest, Goodreads, Flickr, all of those places. I am Sandy Quilts, Sandy with a Y, Quilts with a Z. We have a Facebook group and a Flickr group for quilting for the rest of us. And you can join the Big Tent Quiltcast supergroup. And then once you're into that, you join the Quilting for the Rest of Us subgroup. And if you're not familiar with Big Tent or you haven't gotten really comfortable using it yet, listen to my episode that I will do on Big Tent. And you can join the Quilting for the Rest of Us Kiva team and do good all over the world. There are links for all of that and a lot of other good stuff at www.quiltingfortherestofus.com. And until the next time, go get your quilty on. Quilting for the Rest of Us is dedicated to Shirley. Love you, Mom.